Welcome back to the Coach Kevin Sheehan Show. Doc Walker, DHing Ditton Day, doing what Ditton Day does, and that is dominate, play at a real high level. We are honored today, privileged to have David Harrison, Commanders Game Day, on SI, back here in a familiar position. David, how are you?
I'm doing good, Doc. How are you doing?
Well, I'm wondering how much sleep did you get? Is this one of the busiest days in your business? It's got to be ranking the top, what, top three?
Oh, it's definitely up there. Yeah, if it's not the busiest, it's one of the busiest. But, you know, just like everything, right, we adapt, we overcome. So, interestingly enough, Tuesday, my son actually, he's in boxing, he's in training, be a boxer. So he goes to training multiple times a week. And Tuesday is really the only day I know I can kind of consistently make to go and witness and train. And so yesterday, I was like, you know what, I'm still going to do it. I'm still going to be dad. So I grabbed my laptop, my phone, and my chargers, and I took it to the gym with me. And while he was training, I was looking up at him, watching him, looking down at roster news, and just trying to do a little bit of both, you know what I mean? But, yeah, it's one of the busiest days, very emotional day around the league. You know, there's a lot of guys who hit a road bump yesterday or a speed bump yesterday, but ultimately, you know, NFL teams are kind of now, you know, that much closer to gearing up for the regular season, and that's what it's all about.
Lucky you. I don't feel one ounce of sympathy for you. I had to do that, my kids, with no Wi-Fi, no internet, you know, back in the day, the Stone Ages, with no technology. But I love the fact that you realize the importance of doing both. Oh. And that's the important thing about being a dad and having an athlete, you know, an up-and-coming guy in it. It's an emotional day, but it's also a good day for people who get a second chance or get an opportunity to go and play somewhere else. Was there a shocker or a surprise for you in yesterday's moves with the Burgundy and Gold?
Yeah, I think KJ Henry was a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people, you know, and not maybe the biggest surprise around the league. It's not like he's, you know, a first-round pick, second-round pick, something like that. But, you know, fifth-rounder who had definitely shown some promise, and even with this staff and this scheme that they're getting with Joe Witt Jr. had definitely made some plays, made a play Sunday night against the New England Patriots. And so I think just a lot of people probably had him, you know, honestly, I think people probably had him penned in, right, in their 53-man roster projections for what those are worth. And so to see him get released, you know, we understand that there's kind of this shift towards, you know, the newer guys, the guys maybe fit this scheme a little bit better than they would have fit a different scheme. But I think that was a little bit of a surprise. And then, I mean, the third quarterback, Jeff Driscoll, being held on the 53-man roster, there's certainly reasons to do it, obviously. But I think what's interesting, when you look at the NFL, only 41% of NFL teams actually kept a third quarterback. So certainly Washington in the minority there. So for that reason, it can kind of come across as a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, it is. You know, I love the kid. He had a football mindset. But when you look at the end position in Farrell Armstrong, Jean-Baptiste, and Davis, what I said with Denton earlier today was where he might have lacked in terms of quick twitch athlete.
Yeah.
He was a power bull, hard-charging guy. And that's the only thing that I would have sensed, the different style of athlete at that position right now. And, you know, he's still young, and I do believe he'll be in this league. I chart guys like that, and I'm thinking that's a 5-6-7 year career guy with the right fit. Mm-hmm. And fits are everything for everybody. You got to fit somebody's system. And we're still trying to decide what that system for that position type player is going to be here. Just like the tackle, defensive tackle position. And I thought that Newton's lack of availability really threw a screw in that deal and made Mathis and Ridgeway seem like they were available for a minute.
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of looked at it as, you know, four D tackles minimum, maybe more, you know, and I think, like you said, the Johnny Newton availability or lack thereof so far, it certainly plays a role in that, because they end up keeping five D tackles. And if part of the reason they keep those five, you know, there were the reports that they were trying to orchestrate a trade with involving John Ridgeway. So maybe they were looking to go four or five anyway. But you know, Johnny Nguyen, if he's fully practicing in training camp, fully participating in the preseason and showing, you know, we only got two practices with him, right? But in those two practices, you certainly saw a lot of things that kind of say, okay, this is why they went ahead and drafted a guy that a lot of people didn't view as a major need on their roster per se, with John Allen and Daron Payne at the top there. So just in those two practices, if you can extrapolate that to the whole training camp and preseason, then the excitement meter is over the top. But with him not being available, and presumably this move kind of indicates that he might not be available for the first week or two, you know, as they continue to kind of take it the smart route and not rush him back onto the field too soon. And I think that's why you end up having those guys make the list. I know a lot of people were down on Fenarian Mathis. You know, there's certainly still he's not, you know, there are guys who got released who have been in the league less time, right? So it's kind of awkward to say this, but like, he's still young enough at 26 years old that you got to look at him and say, okay, there's still untapped potential in there. And then the decision to, you know, it's been unconfirmed, but the decision to potentially trade John Ridgeway, if they had struck a deal there, even though John is actually younger, I think the overall kind of view on the two is that John kind of is who he is at this point. Like, he's kind of tapped into the bulk of his potential and just kind of is, which is a solid defensive tackle who's going to play a good amount of NFL games, I think, as long as he can stay healthy. Whereas Fenarian, I think there's still this kind of glimmer of hope that we're holding on to, that he actually has untapped potential to still work with.
David, we talk about the 53-man roster almost like it's a certainty, yet in, you know, 17 minutes, there's going to be so many more changes when the waiver wire is open. Yeah. Is there a guy that was cut around the league that you're looking at saying he might be a good fit here should the team decide to bring him in?
You know, I think a lot of people are looking at the receiver room, and Noah Brown is a guy that got released from the Houston Texans. He's the guy who has familiarity with the Dallas Cowboys, and we've already seen, like, Dan Quinn, even though he's a defensive guy, obviously there's players on the offensive side of the ball that still kind of have that respect for him, that connection with him, like Tyler Biotis did to come over here. But also, you know, and I don't know, you know, the necessary, you know, connecting the dots type of thing, and we all love to do that, about what their relationship, you know, is from here. But Justin Ross is kind of an interesting prospect, I think. I mean, he's like 6'4". I don't know if he's officially listed at 6'4", 6'5", but taller dude, bottom line, right? Kind of a playmaker type. But at the same time, throughout his career, and he was released from the Kansas City Chiefs roster, for those who don't know. And, you know, they were really, really stacked at the receiver group, so they had some really hard decisions that they had to make. But I know that we've all kind of looked at this roster and said, you know, it's kind of height deficient. It's also, you know, this offense likes to make big plays, and he's kind of a guy that fits that mold a little bit. Now, again, there are some other issues, kind of more rumor mill issues than anything, just because I don't have any dealings with him personally to be like, you know, definitively these are issues. But obviously, guys in the league they're going to have a little bit of a better knowledge of what those issues are or aren't, and whether or not they can work with them or not. But even if you bring him in this room, I mean, Terry McLaurin as a leader, obviously this locker room is not just isolated to the receiver room, is your leadership group. Like, there's leaders all over this roster, Zach Ertz, Bobby Wagner. So if there are some maybe studying issues that he needs help with, or practice issues that he needs help with, you know, certainly they've got the guys on this roster and then the coaches on the staff to give a guy like Justin the best shot that he has to be successful. And if they decide to go through that pattern and give him an opportunity and maybe make one of these decisions in one of these other positions, I think he'd be an interesting pick. I don't know that I would go as far to predict it happening. He caught my attention last night as I was kind of going through all the names. And then obviously a kicker, right? We all pretty much expect a kicker to be brought in. I don't know if Cade York's good, you know, Sunday night debut is going to be enough for them to just say, you know what, competition's over, you're our guy. If it is, congrats to you, to Cade York, but I think that most of us expect a kicker to be brought in some way, shape, or form to continue that battle leading up to week one.
Were you as surprised as, I think Denton and I had some dialogue about the fact that we weren't, and they weren't, more aggressive in the cornerback shopping that was a couple of available prospects, one in particular that actually worked for Coach in Dallas? And it didn't seem like a huge cap number, but yet they didn't budge.
Yeah, I think we're all a little bit surprised there, right? Because the secondary last year that they inherited just not good on all different kinds of levels. So to kind of come through here and not address the perimeter corner specifically, I mean, they addressed the safety position. You know, you could even say they addressed it multiple times by moving Quan Martin permanently to free safety, if you want to give them credit for that. And then drafting Mike Sanders, still even bringing in a guy like Noah Igbinoghene as well. But I think those perimeter cornerbacks, like for all the issues that we kind of saw, you know, come to a head with those guys last season specifically, you know, the struggles that Emmanuel Forbes went through in his rookie year, Benjamin St. Juice kind of taking a step back. A lot of that is put on the coaching staff, you know, which I think is certainly fair. But at the same time, like, the issues are still the issues. No matter who you blame for the issues being there, if it's a problem, it's a problem no matter why it's there. So for a new staff, you just kind of assumed, you know, Michael Davis is a nice addition, but I think that people kind of expected more of a top-down approach to it, which Stephon Gilmore, who, you know, obviously now with the Minnesota Vikings, would have been kind of that top-down addition. But, you know, this team, the staff, like Dan and Joe Wade Jr. specifically, like, they know Stephon, they know who they have as far as they know who they have. They, you know, watched all the tape, and Adam Peters and his guys obviously have a deep, you know, evaluation background. So at this point, like, a guy like me, I've just got to trust, because it's most likely the truth anyway. Like, those guys know more than I do in that room. But, you know, for me, and that perimeter cornerback group specifically is the biggest concern coming into this season. It's actually overtaken the offensive line, which was the biggest concern at one point. For me, it's that, because I don't know that this team, you know, no team wants to be in shootouts week in, week out anyway, right? But if this team has to be in a shootout scenario because they're giving up a lot of points because of that weakness, you know, you never want to put a rookie quarterback in that position, no matter how dynamic he might be.
David, outside of his name becoming somewhat of a meme for those in our fan base, like myself, that are immature, what kind of role is Colson Yankoff going to have on the team?
Yeah, Colson is interesting, man, because Colson's kind of a guy that's flown under the radar, and I'm kind of kicking myself because when they signed him as an undrafted free agent, he actually jumped off the list for me personally. I you know, in our press conference following the NFL draft weekend, I specifically asked Dan Quinn about a guy like Colson Yankoff and what he brought, because I had already kind of studied him a little bit and was really intrigued by his background. He's a former quarterback. He's played running back. You know, he's a tight end, but he also in college, you know, like, did some like wide receiver split stuff as well. I mean, this dude is just kind of just an all around ball player. I think, you know, for tight end, obviously, you know, the initial impression is going to be special teams, and who knows, he may be one of those guys. You know, like we mentioned, like, this roster is going to be forever fluctuating. He may be one of those guys that, you know, they want to keep around, but they know that, you know, he probably wouldn't have made it through waivers, so he'll kind of be that guy that later on, once the other teams have kind of scooped up their waiver wire choices, maybe they try to sneak him in on the back end. Who knows? But, you know, at the same time, keeping four tight ends is super justifiable. But the team clearly has prioritized leadership trends or personality traits, and also versatility in position. And Colson Yankoff is just one of the latest in there. And, yeah, like I said, I'm kind of kicking myself because he did intrigue me personally. And just, you know, through the course of training camp, trying to follow the storylines, not somebody who really flashed. So I think that's why he surprised a lot of people. But when you look at the versatility and the leadership aspect, the maturity that he brings to the field, it's really no surprise in the sense that he fits a, you know, Dan Quinn guy or whatever you want to call it for this roster.
Nothing better to establish your bent of mind with a program is when you're not predictable. And draft doesn't matter, but guts and effort. And you applaud it. And that sends a message no greater than cutting high draft picks that suck. If you do that, and everybody knows they can't play, and when you prove it, you buy in. Coach Dick Gibbs did that with us early on, cutting a second-round wide receiver who couldn't remember plays, and everybody knew it. But when he did it, it fortified that confidence. David Harrison, Commanders game day, here with us on the Sheehan Show, DOC and Double D with you. Offensive line, I was just so proud of really watching these guys battle, and guys playing a lot of – Chris Paul played a lot of football this preseason at a number of different positions. And I just think he outplayed Trent Scott from my visual. I mean, my eyes, I'm watching long distance. What say you about the battle between the three or four tackles on this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think I could agree with that. You know, I think that Chris Paul definitely showed more than a veteran like Trent Scott. And, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, Chris has, you know, some experience to tackle going back to college, but in the NFL, obviously, he's been an interior offensive lineman. So the first time we really got to see him kick back out of tackle with some legit competition was that Jets joint practice. And, you know, just being blunt, it didn't go well. But I remember watching when he got to when the team got to the Dolphins joint practice and watching Chris back out there right tackle, and I was telling, some other reporters that were kind of watching, those five practices from Jets to Dolphins joint practice, he looked so much better already. He looked more comfortable, and some of that certainly is going to be, knocking off the rust and kind of reminding your body what it's like to kind of do those motions. But I think some of it also, you give a little bit of credit to Bobby Johnson, the O-line coach, and his ability to teach and maybe take Chris from where he was when they first kicked him out there to that Dolphins joint practice. And then just moving on from there, I think Chris Paul just kind of stacking, really good days. Something that I've kind of always like internally battled with is Chris Paul. I just kind of look at him like, dude, if you could just be a little bit more of a junkyard dog on the playing field, I think you'd meet your ceiling a lot sooner. And that's something that I've always kind of wanted for him. And I think this year you saw him kind of take a step in that direction. But going back to the veteran there, like when Brandon Coleman was out, when Andrew Wiley was out, and when Cornelius Lucas was out for part of that Jets week, we just kind of saw not a lot of people are in love with this tackle group specifically, but you kind of saw the difference from the top of this tackle group that you don't love. It's still better, and not by, not by a close margin, it's better than the guys beneath them. But I do think, like you said, I think Chris Paul took a good step this year in his development as a lineman.
David, final one for me is, we look ahead to week one against Tampa. Cliff Kingsbury, every opportunity that he's gotten, has really praised the running back room. What are you anticipating the run-pass balance going to be week one?
Yeah, I mean, I think, if Cliff has his way, if he had his preference, I think you're looking at 60-40 run, And you could also talk about screens and all those things being extensions of the run play, and how you want to count those and all those things. But I think these running backs are going to have a major, major role in this offense as much as they're allowed to, right? And that kind of goes back to the shootout conversation. If they find themselves in a bunch of shootouts, which Tampa Bay Buccaneers with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, their rookie Jalen McMillan that they love, Rashad White certainly is a receiving back, to his own right, and Baker Mayfield, who loves to take chances, they could find themselves in a shootout week one. And if that happens, and Cliff Kingsbury might find himself compelled to kind of have to put, Jaden on the throwing platform more than he wants to. But if he has his ability to go out there and do what he wants to do, I think these running backs are certainly going to be a major part of this offense, much more than we saw last year. And I think Jeremy McNichols, honestly, you want to keep these guys fresh. You don't want to just run them into the ground. So I think Jeremy McNichols could even see, 3 to 5 touches a game on average, just because they want to kind of keep that ball control and also keep the dynamic weapons they have out there available. And, receivers are going to love that too. The more the teams have to stack the box, the more they have to worry about what's happening between the tackles, the more room those guys on the outside get. And then a veteran like Zach Ertz, who knows how to manipulate space and find it and take advantage of it, it's only going to benefit him as well. So there's really no reason not to get the running backs immensely involved in this offense if you're Cliff Kingsbury. And going back to his history in Arizona, he's shown that when he has the opportunity to do that, he'll do it. And I think that this team is one of those that's poised to allow him to show that again.
I just can't wait to see him play with a level playing field, not being down by 12 or 14 points. And that's when he's going to be dangerous. And really having Cornelius Lucas, nail down left tackle and allow Brandon to heal, and so he can compete, and we just not helping people beat us just by not turning it over, playing smart. Now, with a level playing field, now he can deal, and that's what I hope that happens. David, man, you were awesome. Appreciate that, man, and it's a tough period to get through because it's a relationship business, and nobody likes to see people come and go, but it's going to get fun right around the corner. Hang in there.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
You got it. David Harrison, Commanders game day here on SI. Double D, that was good, man. In this business, it's not fun seeing people dismissed, traded, released. None of that's fun. But it is, the rainbow comes back up when you start getting people that come in, and maybe you pick up somebody and you see smiles on people's faces, and they come back off injury, and there is a bright side to this, and it is, but it's part of the business. Be a lot of fun. We come back, we can get a chance to talk to a man that, boy, when he put his hand in the dirt, I covered this young man's career watching. I'm glad I didn't have to face him because he was a terror. And we're hoping that we're going to get people that played like Ken Harvey. He joins us at high noon here on the Kevin Sheehan Show, DOC, and Denton Day here on Team 980.